We're so close to the Pentagon. Sometimes they ask us to get the coffee. This is Warbird Radio.
Hey, thanks for tuning in to the all-new Warbird Radio Live channel. We're happy to be back on the air right across from the runway at Washington Reagan International Airport. Be sure and tune in Tuesday nights at 8 p.m. Eastern each week for Warbird Radio Live, followed by a new episode of one of our top-tier shows like the R.C. Scale Builder Show, Hartman and Hines, Over the Front, and the all-new Texas Warbird Report and Wings Over New Zealand Show. Listen, this station is all about community, so please join up with us on Tuesday nights and call in and become part of the fun and part of the family. Thanks again for tuning in, and join us Tuesday nights at 8 p.m. Eastern.
Live from Washington, D.C., this is Warbird Radio.
Welcome to the Wings Over New Zealand show. I'm your host, Dave Homewood, and we're live here on Warbird Radio once again. This is the first live episode for the show for 2015, so happy new year to all the listeners out there. I hope you're all enjoying this long, hot summer that we're having here in New Zealand. I know a lot of you aren't. You're up in the UK or USA or Canada under snow right now, but the flying weather's been fantastic here in New Zealand for the last month or so, at least, and we're really enjoying it. I just want to thank Matt Jolly for his continued support on hosting the Wings Over New Zealand show on Warbird Radio, and I just want to introduce our guest today, which is a very interesting and well-known chap in New Zealand warbird scene, and that's Graham Orphan of Blenheim. Hi, Graham.
G'day, Dave. How are things, Matt?
Good, good. Now, you're well known probably all around the world for being the editor of the Classic Wings magazine, which is produced here in New Zealand, covering warbird topics and doing a fantastic job there. But you're also in the top spot of the world famous, organising the world famous Classic Fighters air show, which happens at Omaka in Blenheim in the top of the South Island of New Zealand. So as that's coming up in the next, 8 weeks, at Easter on the 3rd to the 5th of April 2015. We're just going to have a bit of a chat about the air show and probably a few other things as well.
Sure thing. Sounds good to me.
Great. I have to say, to start off with, that the Classic Fighters air show at Omaka is really my favourite air show. I love it. I've told you this before too, Graham, but it's a brilliant air show. It's always got a great mix of warbirds and interesting things going on, and it's in a great setting. It's right in the centre of New Zealand, so most people can get to it fairly easily. And it's just a fantastic air show. Can we just sort of get, for those out there who haven't been, and there's a lot of listeners around the world, can you give a little bit of a background to the air show and how it came about and how it's developed over the years?
Sure thing. Look, it was never intended to be a huge air show, or the huge air show that it's become. It started out with we wanted to start a bit of a group of enthusiasts, coming together here at Omaka Airfield in Blenheim, and we had a number of people doing different things with older aircraft, and thought, let's just do it under one umbrella and enjoy each other's companionship and fly together and restore airplanes together and have some fun. And that evolved into the Marlborough Warbirds Association when we bought two Nanchangs out of China and got those up and running. And I bought a Harvard T6D out of South Africa. I'd been restoring a Tiger Moth, and we got that flying. And long story short, we started holding these fly-ins at Easter time in concert with New Zealand Warbirds Association. So they'd come down and bring their T6s, and we'd fly our Nanchangs and what have you. And it was just really casual, but the public got really interested in what we're doing. So by necessity, we had to do things like, you know, organise portable toilets and a little bit of catering for the public that would invariably come along to see what was going on. And for that, we charged, you know, $5 a car or something like that. And eventually we thought, well, look, you know, if we're going to do this and make it an event, like a serious air show, we've got to totally change gear and make it as good as it can be. And with that comes an opportunity where if you're an aviation community and you're bringing the non-aviation community into your domain, you've got to do your very best to make aviation as attractive as possible. And a case in point is you don't get on the PA and start talking about all up weights and wingspans. You start talking about human interest stories and anecdotes and things like that that draw the people in, and so that they think, wow, these guys in aviation are having a great time. I want a piece of that. So a lot of the philosophy right at the beginning was it's a bit like the magazine. The magazine, our sort of slogan is, you know, turning spectators into participants. And it's all that same culture of we're privileged to be in aviation, we're privileged to be, you know, restoring and flying vintage and warbird airplanes. How can we share that to bring more people into the fold? Because with more people, you can have more airplanes to share and enjoy. So that's really the cornerstone behind it.
Right, okay. So that's right. I just want to remind our listeners that they can call in during the show too, and they can Skype on Warbird Radio, or they can call in on if you want to call America from outside, it's 01 for the country code, and then it's 478-787-4768. So that's sort of, it's developed over time, and you've actually had some quite spectacular things happen over those years of the Classic Fighters Air Show. I mean, for example, getting 7 Fokker triplanes up together, that is pretty incredible.
And still unique. Yeah, I mean, if you're going to sum it up, you'd probably say people have known Classic Fighters Air Show every 2 years for doing some colossally dumb stuff. And part of that, because, I mean, we recognised from day one, if you're going to bring the public in, you're no longer an aviation event, you're an entertainment event. You have a responsibility to bring these people in and give them a really great time with an aviation thing. So when they leave, they've got big smiles on their faces, their tummy's full from eating nice food and having good quality food and drink. You know, obviously, wine is a big part of this area because it's Marlborough's New Zealand's most famous wine-growing area. Bringing those people in and entertaining them. So we've done some crazy things by theming the show. We had France as a theme. We had North Africa as a theme when we built a giant pyramid and sphinxes. When we had France, you might recall, we built an accurate scaled replica of the Eiffel Tower.
That's right.
It was so tall, the CIA made us put a flashing light on the top of it. They didn't actually put anything on the airfield. It was so big. Lester Hope, our magician with props, did that for us. The next year he built a full-size Stuka, which was going to be taxing, but we ended up with a very nice, accurate, static full-size Stuka so that we could show visitors what a Junkers 87 Stuka looks like, full-size parked on a grass airfield. Right. So we've always done that thing. You know, 1 year, you might recall, the theme was Italy, and we built the monastery at Monte Cassino up on the hillside. Oh. It was just insane.
Absolutely. But, you know, that was brilliant.
And we had, can't remember, about 18 airplanes attacking it at one time. And it's just, it's all about spectacle and fun. Obviously, we have a big safety issue where we're looking to all potential problems and mitigating that. But the whole thing is designed around people who aren't normally in an aviation environment, being in that environment and coming away having had just the best time, having had a bolt ton of fun, but also looking into aviation from outside thinking, these guys are having more fun than I usually have. I want this too.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, yeah, it's great. It's good.
And, of course, another thing that you've always been famous for, and this year I'm sure it's going to be quite a focus, is the World War One aviation.
Yeah. I grew up as a kid thinking I'll never be able to own and fly a P-40 or a Spitfire, but I might be able to realistically build a full-size, accurate World War One airplane. And when we started all this at Omaka, sort of late 1990s, it seemed that we had a bit of an alignment of the stars of people who had this shared interest. So when we had our first air show in 2001, we had Stuart Tantrum's Fokker triplane, which was based here then. Peter Jackson has just moved into the World War One arena, and he had his Camel make its debut here, wearing, incidentally, the colours of a local boy, Clive Collett, who was born in Spring Creek here in Marlborough. And we coaxed Ed Storrow from Tennessee to ship us his beautiful Bristol fighter replica. So we had 3 World War One airplanes. We built a Fokker D-8 as a static, so we now had 4 airplanes, and then we built phony tanks and a chateau and various accoutrements of World War One, and had a great fun time. We even had a blimp with a big cross on the side. So I kind of set the scene for building an appetite for World War One as a part of New Zealand air shows, and it's become very popular. But of course, all of that, we had no idea at the time how big that would become as Peter's organisation, the Vintage Aviator Limited, just blossomed. And of course, they've been good enough to supply us with a great range of aeroplanes every year. And of course, with Peter's involvement from the outset with the Marker Aviation Heritage Centre, we've already got 20-something aeroplanes from that collection on the field. So when it all comes together at airshow time, there's all airplanes in the museum. Some of them come out of the museum, and that's how we're able to put together the flight of seven Fokker triplanes, all in the colour schemes of Yasta 11 circa March 1918. So it's just a wonderful thing to be a part of, a wonderful display to take in, and gosh, I never get sick of it. I could watch that forever.
Absolutely. The first time I ever saw anything like that was at the 2007 Classic Fighters, and I had no real interest in World War One aeroplanes until that air show, and afterwards I've taken a great interest. It opened my mind, and you know, when you get to see each year, they seem to have got a bigger and bigger group, and you get about 20 of these things all up in the air together, flying and chasing each other around, and you know, they've got the British, and you've got the little Italian Newport, and you've got the Germans, and it's brilliant. It really is brilliant.
It's almost too much to take in. I mean, I've found that, I mean, the way that TVA guys have worked out the flying program and layering their aircraft groups, like they break it down into groups and they layer them, but where you're looking as a spectator, you're seeing right through the layers, and it just looks like an impossible, irregular melee of airplanes, but it's actually extremely well thought out, very well practiced, and very well planned altogether. So they do a fantastic job, but there's really too much to take in at any one time while you're watching it, because there's so much going on. Plus, of course, there's a whole lot of stuff going on the ground with tanks and troops and all that sort of thing. So it really is a fantastic experience and a huge privilege for anyone, whether it's us as organisers or visitors to the show. It's a huge privilege to be able to see all that going on in one place.
Oh, absolutely. And while we're talking about the World War One thing, this year's theme is Anzac Pioneers, and I'm sure that there must be some sort of tie in there with the Anzacs back to 1915, 100 years ago. To explain to the listeners out there who doesn't know what an Anzac is, back in 1915, the New Zealand Army and the Australian Army were basically put together as one unit, which was the Australian and New Zealand Army Corps, and they went into Gallipoli together on the 25th of April 1915. Which was their first big attack. The New Zealanders had definitely been in action before that on the Suez in February 1915, but this was the first really big attack that the two countries had actually ever really gone to war in. And they forged a sort of really amazing history, didn't they?
Well, it's a funny thing, and I see myself as, again, a little bit privileged that I've been able to spend my life spread between the two countries. And it's a funny kind of relationship because these two countries, as you know, on the sports field, no matter what it is, whatever the competition is, the competition is pretty fierce between Australians and New Zealanders on sports field. And crikey, you know, as individuals and as nations, we'll throw rocks at each other all day long, usually in the form of cheap shot jokes. But it's great fun, but it's really like a family. I always see it as two brothers. If ever there was an illustration of brothers in arms, point to the Anzacs, because it explains it so well, where you've got like brothers who will fight amongst themselves and it's not really harmful, but somebody else picks on the family and they're a force to be reckoned with. So that's how I see the Anzac tradition. It's like that family sibling rivalry that when it's brought together with a common goal or a common enemy, watch out because you've got a pretty serious opponent on your hands.
Absolutely, that's totally correct. And, of course, it wasn't just 1915 that they were together. They continued to operate together in Palestine in 1917. They were put back together on Crete in 1941, and various other times in history. Vietnam, there was the Anzacs working together again, and I believe even in, up in the Middle East and more recent times, there've been, you know, little Anzac units working together, and it's a wonderful relationship. As you say, there's all the rivalry and everything, but they are like brothers. So, yeah.
Fantastic. At the end of the day, the bond's pretty damn strong.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
Mm. And so naturally, for the air show, we'll have a nod to that Anzac tradition in a number of ways. You'll see a bit more of that come Easter time. But, yeah, we've got a few things in mind to just pay homage to that relationship. It's 100 years old. I mean, we couldn't not have Anzac as part of our theme when we're April 2015, you know, celebrating 100 years since the founding of that Anzac tradition. So it seemed a natural fit. Anzac pioneers, obviously, is talking about the first of the Anzacs 100 years earlier, but it's also there is another element to the pioneers part of the theme. So it's almost the double meaning, and we can show you a little bit more about that as we get closer to the air show.
Right, and that's one of the things with air shows now is that the news rolls out week by week and builds up to the air show. So as we're still about 8 weeks out, we can't tell everything yet. But just keep an eye on your website and keep an eye on the Wings Over New Zealand Aviation Forum, because the news is rolling out there too, isn't it, Graham?
Absolutely right. Yeah, we'll be doing releases every week right up to Easter.
And the things that you have released so far, you're going to have three DC-3s on the field, which is the first time in a long time that we've would have had three DC-3s together in New Zealand.
Yeah, I think the last time was at Wigram in 1995, and I was there because one of them was the Warbirds Dakota in camouflage colours. So it was kind of the military and the two civilians. This time we've got three aircraft in the familiar white top deck, aluminium underside, striped down the side kind of configuration. And it's just... Personally, I just want to see the three of them lined up together looking like an airline scene in the late pre-war or early post-war period where DC-3s were so common. And of course, we have to remind ourselves that even to this day, these wonderful airplanes are being scrapped because they can't earn a living anymore. So little by little, we are still losing them. Thankfully, I think a lot will survive and continue to have homes for a long time. The message, though, is don't take it for granted.
It's actually great too that two of those aircraft are still operating as airlines right now. I mean, the Warbirds one is basically a charter airline. The other one is part of the other one's part of Air Chatham's, isn't it? So
absolutely. And the third one will be flying again. I see the overhaul propellers have just arrived, so that's great. Well, to go back on the airplane. I think the main thing is what I said before: don't take it for granted. There's still one of the greatest privileges and joys you can have in aviation is going for a fly in a vintage airliner. Imagine if there were no DC-3s anywhere in the world and someone said, imagine what it'd be like if you could find one of those and restore it and put passenger seats in it and have kind of a nostalgic airline flight of the 30s or 40s. You'd jump at the opportunity. The fact that they've been around for a while makes you take them for granted. Don't do that. Go and fly in them. Fly in them lots of times. Just enjoy them while you can because they're so very special.
I totally agree with that, and they're not even that expensive to go for a flight in either.
No, it's a gift.
I mean, they're brilliant, and I've actually had the great privilege to fly in the one that's based at Ardmore, the Warbirds Dakota, ZKDAK, better known as Betsy. You know, that is, it's magic. And, of course, the last Classic Fighters I flew down from Hamilton to Omaka in it, and the service is so much better than Air New Zealand. It, you know, you're getting champagne on the service. You know, it's like fantastic, and you fly a lot lower.
The service is actually very good, so that is saying something.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, you fly a lot lower, so you get to see a lot more of the countryside, and it's not as bumpy and that sort of thing. So, no, I totally agree with you. It's a good way to do it, and the Air Chatham's DC-3 will be taking flights, taking people across from Wellington, won't it?
That's correct, yeah. So I think they're initially flying down with a group from Auckland and then they're going back to Wellington and bringing a load through from Wellington, and they'll do that both of the major days of the air show. So great opportunity for Wellington-based people to arrive in the show in style, the best possible way you could turn up at an air show.
Absolutely. And, of course, there's going to be another big gathering of aircraft with Nanchangs. Tell us about that.
Yeah, absolutely. A friend of ours was having a Nanchang rebuilt. He started the project years ago, and it's taken a long time. Then he got posted out of town because he got a job flying for Virgin Airlines and had to base himself in Christchurch. So he had the airplane finished off here at Omaha by Gem Aviation, who, of course, are the nation's experts on Nanchangs. And they've done most of the Nanchang work around the country over the last decade. So Muddy, the guy that owns the airplane, got so enthusiastic. He said, right, we're going to get every Nanchang in the country on the airfield flying for Easter time. And at the time, there were six flying, and then his one was the seventh. So he said, right, there's seven flying. We want all eight of them at the show. And I had to think for a second, well, the only other one that's close is mine. So it was kind of like, well, your airplane's going to be flying, time for the show too. So he set up a program to get my airplane flying, which is ZK Wok, jokingly. And that airplane hadn't flown for 7 or 8 years. And so Muddy wrote the program for, here's what we're going to do. We're going to have this work done here and that there, and the engine will go over here, and so on and so forth. So my focus has been on another project downstairs, a pre-war Fairchild touring airplane. But now we have both airplanes racing along with the view that the Nanchang will be flying with the other seven aircraft at Easter time. And in the meantime, another one's come in for Roger Wadham, an old friend of mine from my Australian days, who has always wanted a Warbird. This is his first one, although he, in his earlier career, built a full-size Spitfire in Sydney, which is where we worked together, and that Spitfire is now hanging up in the museum in Tauranga. Lots of interlaced connections there. But Roger's a very talented guy, and he's been in the hangar next door at Gem Aviation working on the Nanchang for the last 10 or 12 days, and he's absolutely having the time of his life.
Oh, that's great. That's brilliant. And, of course, you mentioned that your Nanchang and your Fairchild, but you've also got another Fokker triplane, haven't you?
Yeah. We finished that mid-last year, which we absolutely love. It's such a nice little airplane. It's finished quite distinctively in the colours of Josef Jacobs, who was a huge advocate for the triplane. He kept flying the triplane after everyone else went on to the Fokker D7, just because this was the mount that he most trusted and that he was having success with. And he kept flying them almost to the end of the war, and he survived the war and lived to a ripe old age. So it's a great story. And of course, his airplane was, he had two triplanes that he kept after the rest were retired, and he painted them both all over black, slight variations on the scheme. This is his second, the colour scheme of his second airplane, and it's a very simple all over black airplane with white crosses on it, simple as that. So that's what we've done. We've recreated that as faithful as we could, and it's flying beautifully. It has a Rotec radial from Australia, 150 horsepower, and it seems to be the right weight and size and power for the airplane. It works very, very well. So we're just loving it.
Well, that's great. And so there's a chance that we might actually see eight of them flying together?
Well, we've talked to the guys at TVAL, and they've certainly agreed to put the seven up that we normally have. We've still got to have the conversation about the eighth one, actually. But it'll really be up to those guys and their policy and insurance and their practicing and so on. So TVA is a very professional organisation, the way it runs the flying. If they can write it into the script, as it were, with their practice routines, we'll certainly be happy to make the airplane available to a TVA pilot. They're all very professional guys, and would love to see it in there. But either way, we're expecting eight airplanes on the field, eight triplanes, that is. So that in itself is quite a special gathering.
Actually, it's really nine because you've got one in the museum as well, haven't you?
That one's
the one with the wings broken.
Another Australian connection there, Anzac connection.
Oh. Yep. Oh, of course, because it's got the Australians looting it, haven't they?
That's the story, yeah. But people might need to go to the museum to fully appreciate that.
Yeah, exactly. That's a little diorama of Richthofen's crashed aircraft just after he's been shot down, some say by a Canadian pilot, Brown, and others say by the Australians. I think you would say the Australians, wouldn't you?
It's not up to me. It's I defer to the book on the subject by Norman Franks and Alan Bennett, which use modern forensics and ballistics and all the other techniques to deduce that. But at the end of the day, when you do read through that, it's very, very clear that of the three autopsies that were carried out, the official one under Sinclair and Nixon, the two medical officers who officially had the role of doing the autopsy, discounted the three applications that were on the table, being Canadian Roy Brown, Australian number three AFC, and the guys on the ground, Evans and Bowie. They had all put in claims that they shot down the Baron, and they were all discounted by the findings of that initial post-mortem examination. So, I mean, it's a total different subject from what we're supposed to be talking about, but it's a fascinating subject. When people come to the museum, they need to see the display. But I have to say, if I was the Royal Flying Corps, I was just becoming the Royal Air Force at the time, if I was in charge of propaganda, there's no way I would have attributed that loss to anything other than the nearest Sopwith Camel, because you didn't want the ace of aces of Germany to shot down by an apparently stray bullet from the ground. You know, it had to be something a little bit more romantic than that, and an opposing jousting knight of the sky would really be the only answer that you could put out there to the press.
Yeah, totally agree with that. So we're talking about the actual Aviation Heritage Centre, which people can visit during the air show or any time of the year. Sure. What's all happening in there at the moment? Is there any more developments that we'll see by the air show? Or
Yeah, timing's appalling, really, because we've got a number of things happening. The CEO of the museum put in various applications over a period of time, and she was able to get some funding for some displays internally. One of those is an engine display. Another one is the display of Clive Collett, who was, I mentioned before, was the local camel pilot. There's apparently a story that he was the first aviator to shoot down a German aircraft whilst flying a Sopwith Camel. But I believe that's been refuted or at least contested. He was also an early pioneer of parachuting, so we were planning to have a simulated parachute drop with, you know, a primitive parachute and collet beneath that canopy. So that's all. We're trying to get that all done in time for Easter. In the meantime, we have the funding now to start put the first World War II hall up. That's a 30-metre by 50-metre building. That will be the beginning of the AHC's World War II story. So initially, hopefully by the end of this year, we'll have on display the flying aircraft, the Spitfire Mark 14, the Avro Anson, the Focke-Wulf 190, the Yak 3, and possibly one or two others on the floor level with the replica Hurricane and Stuka hanging from the ceiling. So it should be quite an impressive display and an interesting management challenge for us, mindful of the aircraft at floor level or flying aircraft. So we'll have them in dioramas, but they'll still need to be able to be moved in and out of the building when the time comes to fly. So interesting challenge, but we're up for it.
Great. Well, we're just going to take a quick ad break here, Graham, and we'll be back with you in a few minutes.
We're so close to the Pentagon, sometimes they ask us to get the coffee. This is Warbird Radio.
Hey, thanks for tuning in to the all-new Warbird Radio Live channel. We're happy to be back on the air right across from the runway at Washington Reagan International Airport. Be sure and tune in Tuesday nights at 8 p.m. Eastern each week for Warbird Radio Live, followed by a new episode of one of our top-tier shows like the R.C. Scale Builder Show, Hartman and Hines, Over the Front, and the all-new Texas Warbird Report and Wings Over New Zealand Show. Listen, this station is all about community, so please join up with us on Tuesday nights and call in and become part of the fun and part of the family. Thanks again for tuning in, and join us Tuesday nights at 8 p.m. Eastern.
Live from Washington, D.C., this is Warbird Radio.
Welcome back to the Wings Over New Zealand show, live here on Warbird Radio, and I'm talking with Graham Orphan from Omaka in Blenheim. Hi, Graham.
Dave, hi, how's it going?
Now, we were talking about the air show, which is coming up at Easter, and one of the features that you always have at the air show at Omaka is Restoration Row. which is all the aircraft that have been restored on the airfield, which there's always a lot of them, all put in one place where people can have a look at the current restoration projects. Will that be happening again this time?
No.
Oh, it's
I'm
not.
Just kidding. I'm just kidding. I'm just kidding. No, actually, this year we've got a bit of a challenge with space because we've got quite a few things going on, airplanes that are at that stage in the restoration where they make quite good viewing. So we've actually covered areas from World War One through the Between the Wars period, World War Two, and possibly one post-war era airplane. But the most interesting ones, well, certainly the one that's the star for me is the Yak-9V, which is like the familiar V-12-powered Yak-9 fighter, but with the full dual-control cockpit arrangement. So this airplane belongs to a syndicate which is based here at Omaka and will be able to fly as a V-12 Warbird trainer. Now, with the Allison engine, full dual control, that makes it a very versatile airplane, something that we can do a lot of things with. For those syndicate members who perhaps become medically challenged as they get older and can't maintain a medical, they can still fly the airplane with a qualified pilot in the back. For training, obviously, doing conversion training to get into the syndicate makes a lot of sense. If you're going to bring people into a V-12 Warbird fighter, you need to make sure that the training steps are adhered to correctly. So starting with a small tail dragger and going up through the stations, just as they did in World War II in the US system, where you had the primary trainer, the basic trainer, the advanced trainer, and so on. So we should be able to have that facility here. And we do have things like Tiger Moths and Stearmans and the fleet biplane and so on. For those earlier steps, Nanchangs for constant speed and retract. We're looking at having a Harvard based on the field before this year's out, and then into the Yak-9. So the final step into the fighter won't be a solo experience as it was for the young kids in World War II in most cases, because you will have that extra careful step of having a full dual control fighter. So we're really excited about it. This airplane's been in the gestation for quite some time, but we're hoping that by this air show, we'll have it sitting on the wings, sitting on its undercarriage, tail group on, the whole airframe clearly structurally finished. So it's very exciting.
Right. Yeah. And now there's a couple of aircraft that are undergoing restoration at the moment that we hope to maybe see at the air show, and that one of them is the Spitfire Mark 14, of course. Mm-hmm. How's that coming along?
Really well. Warren and the guys at Avspecs have pulled out all stops to get the airplane done in time. Warren's first announcement to the staff that they were going to try and make it to the show came under the heading of all leave cancelled. a fairly military directive to tell the guys we're going to make this airplane fly in time for Easter. And of course, the Avspecs guys do such a beautiful job and you know, invariably award-winning airplanes that look like they've just rolled out of the factory. And that's definitely what we're seeing in the progress photos of Mark 14. So pretty excited about it. The engine was overhauled. It's a Griffin, of course. Was overhauled by Vintage V12s in California. Jose did that for us, and it's a magnificent job. The propeller was overhauled here in Blenheim by Safe Air, and airframe, engine, and propeller should all be united within the next couple of weeks and some early engine runs done. So, no, we're getting very excited about it. It's huge undertaking, but it's looking pretty good. And, of course, that'll make three Spitfires flying in New Zealand, which is the first time ever, actually.
Yeah. That'd be fantastic. Mm. And of course, it's got its own history in New Zealand, being the aircraft that was owned by Sir Tim Wallace with the Alpine Fighter Collection as well, and unfortunately damaged when he had a crash in it. But it's going to be great to see it back in the air.
Absolutely. Yeah, no, it's very special to a lot of people in New Zealand, and it'd be quite a celebration to have it on the field here. And, of course, once the air show is over, it lives here permanently. So, it's a very exciting development for us.
Brilliant. And the other one I was going to ask about, and I'm not really sure about this myself, but the Catalina has been under restoration, and there has been a lot of talk amongst fans that hopefully it might be done by the air show.
I can tell you the answer there. Yeah, that had been planned. And the guys have done such an amazing job going through that aircraft over the last 4 years. One area they hadn't touched was the empennage. The whole tail group hadn't been worked on for over a decade. And the decision was made, sadly for us, but I think it was the right decision, that where they've gone back and effectively almost zero-timed the entire airframe, they've decided, okay, let's not stop. Let's go right through everything so that the whole airplane's been done completely. So there's quite a lot of time still to go back into it, but it should be flying in time for the first air show next year, probably Easter at Wanaka, or possibly Tauranga. So, no, we won't sit at Omaka this year, but we're huge fans of the Catalina Club and what they've done in the past. And, it'll be worth doing. The job that they've done will see that aeroplane flying in good health for decades.
Yeah, absolutely. It's going to be good to see it back. It's always been a classic on the scene, hasn't it?
Definitely. Good crew too, really good people.
Yeah. Now, you're also going to have a lot of Warbird rides this year because there's a lot more of these aircraft coming on the scene that can now take people up as paying passengers. So do you want to talk about that?
Absolutely, yeah. We've got from the Warbirds Association. Was actually a company within that community that was formed to operate several aircraft under Part 115. And now that there have been several Part 115 Adventure Aviation licenses approved, you'll be able to ride in P-51 Mustang, P-40 Kitty Hawk, Spitfire TR-9. Rides are limited. I was talking to Frank Parker about this the other day, who's president of New Zealand Warbirds, and he said realistically, the number of flights you can do morning before the show, after the show, both days, then some rides on the Monday, you still end up with not more than about 9 rides per aircraft, and they're actually booking up now. We still have some vacancies in the jets if you're interested in getting into a Strike Master, which has the unusual advantage of being side by side. Few of the military jets are that configuration, and that makes them very popular. So I would be recommending that if you're interested in a jet ride, there'll be several available. And for any of those rides, if you're interested in pursuing it, get in touch with the Omaka Aviation Heritage Centre and get your bookings in now.
Fantastic. And you mentioned the Strike Master. It's great to have some of those back on the scene. And just the other day we had another one take to the air after it's been restored. So we've now got 4 flying in New Zealand. It's just fantastic, isn't it?
It's impressive. I was looking it up the other day because no Strike Master had flown for 19 or 20 years in New Zealand before the first one came back with Brett Nichols, and our company, Classic Aircraft Sales, had taken great delight in selling that on behalf of Rod Hall in New South Wales back into New Zealand. And Rod was particularly passionate about seeing the airplane go home. He thought if it was going to sell from his ownership in Port Macquarie, New South Wales, it needed to go back to New Zealand. And he was delighted to effect that outcome. And then the second one sold to a gentleman in Wellington. And then subsequently, Brett Nichols was able to get another one out of Western Australia. That's Strike Master 6-2, which made its first flight on Friday afternoon. So it's really an amazing time because there were only ever 16 of those airplanes flying in the country. And, of course, then there were none for 2 decades. Yeah. And now there are 4. So we're back to quarter strength.
It's amazing. It really is.
Who would, and then, no one would have written that script.
Back in the day when I was in the Air Force back in the 1990s and they were just ending their service, they were considered, you know, pieces of crap. And now I see them and it's like, no, wait, these are brilliant. They're brilliant aircraft. It's good to see them back. You know, at the time when they were ending their service, we were just thinking, oh, we just want to get the next new replacement. These are old hats sort of thing. And it's amazing how these things develop from something you don't want to something that's a classic. And
what's new is old becomes new again. Yeah.
Exactly. Talking about the world of Warbirds and restorations and that, just turning to Classic Wings magazine for a minute, is there anything you want to talk about with the magazine and how – the world Warbird scene is going and what we might see in the next edition, which will probably be a wee way away because you're so busy at the moment. But
Well, thankfully, Dave Donald is looking after the magazine really, really well while I've got my hand on the airshow tiller. So the magazine is in fine fettle in that regard. Looking further down the track, look, I just think it's going to get more and more interesting. The whole warbird scene, the vintage aviation scene, it's growing. There are more people coming into it. And, of course, with the GFC holding things back kind of artificially for 6 or 7 years, with that slipping behind us now, we're starting to see almost a swing back of the pendulum where the people who've sat on their hands and not allowed themselves to get involved with these aircraft now doing so with a little bit of urgency. It's one of the reasons that the Nanchang thing is happening at this Easter time is that these airplanes are scurrying around. People are suddenly buying them because they can. And so where we had half a dozen Nanchangs on the market at quite reasonable prices 6 months ago, they're all gone, every single one of them. They've all just suddenly gone. So that's putting upward pressure on prices. It's getting people more interested in finding out, well, what else is out there? So I just think we're seeing at a time where you're about to have not that there was a need for a renaissance, but there's just a sudden flurry of increased interest because people now can afford to consider the luxury of being involved in these aircraft. And particularly if you look at syndicates, I mean, that just makes entry into this type of aircraft involvement such a simple and affordable thing. So look, I think it's a really wonderful time with Classic Wings. We're going to continue to do what we've always done and encourage people to get more involved and find ways to help them do so. We just love being involved with all this and reporting on it. And, of course, now we're starting to do a bit more reporting on our own aircraft. One of the next editions, we'll be doing a big feature on the triplane, and Gavin Conroy is going to come up with me, and I'm going to fly the triplane. He's going to try and shoot some epically crazy photographs of the airplane and really show it to its best advantage. That's all great fun. Plus, of course, we're so heavily involved with the Mark 14. As I was saying to you before we came on air, I'm still trying to organise the cowling fastens out of England to make sure that there's all the cowlings to go on the airplane within the next 2 or 3 weeks to get the thing finished. So we're very much involved with that airplane too, and naturally we'll do a massive feature on that in Classic Wings to try and do justice to the airplane.
Brilliant, brilliant. The one last sort of question that I've got that probably everyone wants to know the answer to, but you probably can't even tell us at this stage, but often you'll have overseas participation, things like the RAAF. Is there anything that you can hint at least for this year, Shane?
Not with military arms at all. We're always going to keep a few things up our sleeves till the last minute in terms of things that people aren't expecting to see at the show. As you've seen before, we've got a few surprises still up our sleeves, but we've probably talked about as many of them as we want to just at the moment.
Right. Well, that's fantastic, and people can keep up with what's going to be rolled out over the next few weeks by going to your website at www.classicfighters.com.
Absolutely.
And of course, they can also subscribe to Classic Wings via www.classicwings.com.
If they're not already.
Well, they
can go to Classic Wings Facebook and find out what's going on there. But, by all means, love to see more people getting on board. Be good.
Brilliant. Well, thank you very much, Graham. It's been a really interesting chat with you, and I'm certainly looking forward to the air show. I can't wait to get down there.
It's a pleasure, Dave. I look forward to seeing you here.
Thanks. Thanks very much.
Okay, mate. Well, cut it now.
Bye-bye. Well, that was great to chat with Graham about the air show and hear all about that. And, of course, it's air show season here in New Zealand at the moment, and we've just had another of the big air shows a few weekends ago. I just wanted to give a bit of a report on that too before we finish up. So we've got the air show which I had a couple of weekends ago was the famous Wings Over Wairarapa air show. And I went down to that, thanks very much to Corin McRae of Aerowood, who builds wooden aircraft parts. If you want to look up his website, aerowood.co.nz. We went down there, and the air show itself was absolutely brilliant, marred by basically too much heat. And too much wind, unfortunately. The weather is the only thing that came into it. We could have actually done with a bit of rain. It was that hot. It was actually baking everybody. You just you couldn't sort of think that's how hot it was. But they've got a drought going on down there at Wairarapa at the moment. It's not a good situation for the farmers and all the people who live down there. But they put on a great air show. I really enjoyed it. And some of the highlights, apart from the fact that, you know, some of the World War I types couldn't fly because of the high wind, and that goes for the Pierce replica and the Pitha replica. They were replicas of early aircraft in New Zealand. The Pierce replica being based on what they think was built by Richard Pierce and supposedly by some degree might have flown in 1903, around about 9 months before the Wright brothers. But there's a lot of conjecture about this, and there's no real facts apart from the fact that Pierce himself stated to a newspaper in about 1909 that he didn't really do any practical work on an aircraft until 1904. So he himself basically said he didn't beat the Wright brothers. But there's always this thing going on where people think, oh, it must have been Pierce, because they want to think that a Kiwi did it. But unfortunately, no. The Pitha monoplane was a later aircraft and may have flown quite well in 1910, I think it was. Might have been the first aircraft to fly here, but there was no one else around to see it fly. So it's all just based on the pilot's word. But the highlights of that air show, the Avro Anson, which we'll see again at Omaka because that's where it lives, the world's only Avro Anson Mark I, put on an amazing display, doing its usual display of dogfighting with the BF-108. The BF-108 Typhoon is a genuine Luftwaffe aircraft that flew with them during the war, and it's fitted with gas guns. And so it has a great little dogfight with the Avro Anson, which was a twin-engine bomber early in the war and fast became outclassed. And when it became outclassed, it became a trainer. So for the rest of the war, they were training pilots with them, or training navigators as well, and gunners, all sorts of people, all over Canada, New Zealand, Australia, Britain. Brilliant aircraft, and this is the only Mark I, the wartime version, flying in the world. But they put on an amazing display because the new thing about it, it actually dropped bombs. The aircraft came and landed after its dogfighting display, taxied up to in front of the gold stand, and Scotty Tudor and Martin Reed, who are part of the team, all dressed up in World War II RAF uniform, marched along with these replica 250-pound bombs, and they fitted them into the bomb bay in front of the people, and then it took off again with the world-famous Dave Phillips flying the aircraft, of course, and did a bombing run and was absolutely brilliant. It actually worked really well. So we're hoping we might see that again at Omaka. We talked with Graham a little while ago about the Strike Masters, and we had two Strike Masters at Wairarapa, and they flew together in a jet team with a Vampire and two L-39 Albatrosses, and we also had a de Havilland Venom there too, so we had some great jet displays. Just going back to the Anson too, one of the highlights for me was on the Sunday morning before the air show started, we got to see Bill Reed, who owns the Anson, and Dave Phillips, who's the chief pilot on it, take up Les Munro. Now, Les Munro is one of the original dam busters. He's the last living pilot of number 617 Squadron Dams Raid, the famous Mona and Ada dams. Made famous by the movie, but also an amazing achievement during the war. Now, Les is just about to turn 96. In 2 months' time, he'll turn 96. He got to go up in it, sit in the second pilot seat, and actually had a bit of a fly himself. So isn't that brilliant? Another highlight, too, was they got a gathering of Bren gun carriers. These are World War II tracked vehicles, which were used by the British and Allies and all the Commonwealth forces, and for many years after the war. I think they got 30 of them together. They took 29 of them around the airfield, which was a 2-kilometre track, and The record that they were trying to break was that 17 of them had been run together over the 2 kilometer distance, and they managed to get 27 of them home. So they've broken the world record by 10 brain gun carriers. That was quite cool. It's always a highlight to see Dave Phillips doing his Tiger Moth display as well. He's the world master of Tiger Moth aerobatics. He's just absolutely brilliant. That was great at the air show. We got to see an air race between Harvards and Yak 52s. That was really quite cool. Obviously, the air races aren't quite the competitive type of air races that you see in the USA. They're choreographed, but even so, seeing aircraft trying to battle each other in the air, low down and close to the crowd, that's pretty spectacular. We got to see the Royal New Zealand Air Force's Urukoi helicopters, better known as the Huey. We got to see one of those doing one of the final displays because they're being phased out this year after serving with the Royal New Zealand Air Force since 1965. So that was a highlight for me to see one of the last Urukoi displays, and I hope that we might see another one at Omaka as well. And another great Warbird highlight was seeing the Pacific flight, which involved Brendan Dare's Avenger. Grumman Avenger with the Corsair and two P-40s on the Saturday. Unfortunately, one of the P-40s had a leak, and that wasn't so good. So on the Sunday, it had to be repaired. But we got to see, you know, these Pacific fighters escorting the Avenger bomber. That was fantastic. And the original actual Chitty Chitty Bang Bang car, which I believe is known as Genevieve, was there as well. That's owned by Sir Peter Jackson. And one of the greatest highlights for me was on the way home, rather than come home by car, I actually got to have a ride in the de Havilland Beaver with Graham Woods flying it. The Warbird's de Havilland Beaver, that was brilliant, flying at about 2,000 feet all the way up, back up to, we came into Waharoa at Matamata, and that was a brilliant flight. Loved it, absolutely loved it. And that's pretty much it, really. Coming up in the February for Warbird air shows around the place, we've got the Ardmore Showdown, which is a mainly car-oriented, but it has Warbirds involved in it. That's on the 15th of February. And then on the 19th through to the 22nd of February, we have the Art Deco weekend at Napier. Thanks very much for listening, and we'll see you probably in a month's time or so on the Wings Over New Zealand show. Cheers.